Live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the Local Edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with us tonight. Coming up, we have our regular check-in with Sullivan County. Sullivan County Treasurer Nancy Buck will be joining us live. But first, we have a very big interview because it's our regular check-in with New York Focus, the independent newsroom, doing in-depth reporting on how the state really works. And tonight, we turn to New York Focus once again for a deep dive into the state's brand new, nearly three-week late $237 billion budget and what it means to you. Maya Hibbett, managing editor for New York Focus, is here to discuss what got in the budget and what didn't. Maya, welcome back to the Local Edition.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So there's a lot to talk about here, but I actually wanted to start this conversation with an observation and then the three questions that New York Focus asks right near the beginning of this article explaining the budget. And here's my slightly edited version of this paragraph from you. It says, this year's final budget came together with relatively little fanfare. While some issues saw outcry, this year's budget battles appeared less pitched than many. Is it because it's an election year and New York Democrats want to project a unified front after their disastrous showing in 2022? Or is it because leadership has tightened its grip on leaks to the press? Or is there really just not much to note? And so I'm going to start you off with those three questions. Why do you think possibly that there is a little less visible fighting going on?
Sure, yeah. So these three questions were kind of all proposed as potential explanations for why this year's budget fight was a bit quieter than some. I think if you compare it just to last year, there were fewer high-profile issues that were getting a lot of activity, not just from activists and lobbyists and the like, but especially from members of the legislature. There wasn't as much public fighting with the governor as we saw in previous years. And so one thought about this is, well, 2024 is obviously a big election year. It's going to be really crucial for Democrats in races up and down the ballot. But the notion that the Democratic Party of New York really kind of fell apart and didn't do a very good job getting out the vote in 2022 and contributed to the Democrats losing seats has continued to haunt them. And so one thought is, well, maybe they want to look like they're a really united party, one that voters can trust in, because that way they'll drive turnout to the polls and there won't be as much scrutiny on the Democrats. Another possibility, which is potentially a method to allowing the previous kind of proposal or strategy to be carried out, is that the leadership has actually really cracked down on allowing legislators and staff members to speak to the press. So I think, as some people know, the New York State budget process is very secretive. It's often just carried out between these specific leaders, namely Andrea Stewart-Cousins, Carl Hastie, and Kathy Hochul, and then their staff members. And then there are often some third-party groups like labor unions or real estate officials who are sort of deputized to participate in negotiations. But it's supposed to be a very small and a very closed process. And the way people like us in the press find out what's actually happening and report it to the public is that generally somebody tells us something they were maybe not supposed to have told us. And this happens all the time in politics. It's kind of something that is expected. But there is always the possibility that someone in an office will say, we're really going to be tough on this and we're going to look for the leakers and we're going to punish you if you're talking to the press. So people may have just been strongly encouraged to clamp down, shall we say. And then the last question, you know, is there really just not much to note? We said it's not that one. There was obviously lots to talk about and lots that got passed in the budget.
And we're going to get into that. But on that first question about the political angle and the possible need for party unity, as you were talking about that, it also occurred to me, you know, the budgeting process in New York essentially starts with the State of the State address, where the governor lays out a policy vision for the coming year as, you know, the final budgeting process starts. And it seems to me like the governor was kind of teeing up a less contentious session by not going as big as she went the previous year, not shooting for the moon as she did with housing last year. There's still key issues that she clearly felt strongly about, but didn't seem to be, you know, teeing them up as ambitiously or as notably as last year.
Definitely, yeah. And I mean, it was interesting because last year, Kathy Hochul proposed this huge housing package. She was calling it the New York State Housing Compact. And it was really the centerpiece of her executive budget. And it was this major proposal and this huge public fight. And this year, she really didn't talk about it in the State of the State. Obviously, housing is kind of an omnipresent problem in New York and will never not be talked about at all. But it was not one of her key issues as she laid them out initially. And then everyone began to notice as budget negotiations were proceeding that, in fact, they were once again really duking it out over housing, and the labor unions and REBNY, the Real Estate Board of New York, had actually been deputized to work out this development sort of plan that we can talk about in a second. But it was kind of a reversal because, unlike last year when she made this big fanfare out of the housing issue and then didn't get anything, this year she did not really focus on it in a public-facing way and then did actually get a housing deal out of it. And people, you know, people have a lot of different opinions over whether that's a good deal or not, but it was certainly a quieter presentation that actually yielded a lot more change than last time.
And your breakdown to the 2024 New York State budget has essentially nine main topic areas, and I'd like to get to as many of those as we can. But is there anything big picture that you want to set up for people before we actually get into what was done in those subject areas?
Sure. Anything big picture? I mean, so the budget came in at $237 billion. The Senate and the Assembly had countered asking for just a little bit more, $246 billion. So, you know, when we're talking about numbers this big, that's not a huge difference, but they were looking for a bit more spending. And I think this year, the state legislature and the governor were really going into this, perhaps an austerity mindset is too strong of a way to put it, but there was a lot of interest in saving rather than spending. And people were, again, it's an election year. I think they were very afraid of raising taxes, really didn't want to do that. There was actually a push for a tax on the wealthy that did not go through. And that was something that the legislature did put forward and thought that it would help them pay for some of the kind of spending programs for all New Yorkers by raising this tax on the wealthy, but it did not pan out. So that additional spending didn't end up in the budget either.
Okay, getting into the issues and the policy of it, let's get back to housing that you were just talking about. What actually was done for housing in this budget?
Yeah, so one big thing was this tax break for developers for new construction in New York City. And I think a lot of people have probably heard of the old version. It was called 421A. This one is the much more comprehensible 485X. But it's essentially a new version of that program. And it gives developers a 40-year exemption from most property taxes. So if you are building a new apartment in New York City, you're going to get out of your property taxes in most cases for the next four decades. And in order to get that tax break, they have to offer at least 20% of new apartments at rates below market rate or rents below market rate. And on bigger projects, they have to pay a higher minimum wage to construction workers. And so this allows these developers to, it gives them an incentive to construct new apartments. There's a lot of controversy over how it's been carried out. Some people point out that below market rate apartments are still not necessarily affordable to a lot of people. The decision of whether the units count as affordable or not is based on something called the area median income, or AMI. And that's calculated throughout all of New York City. And so it means that if you are renting an apartment somewhere in Queens, your affordability level might be set in the same way as somebody renting an apartment in the middle of Manhattan. And so it can result in pretty unequal estimations of what is actually affordable, or, you know, so-called below market rate. But it does mean that developers will be incentivized to actually create more housing throughout New York City. And that program will be in place for the next 10 years, at least.
Wow. All right. Well, on to education. What was done or undone for education in this year's budget?
So the legislature was really, or the state was really discussing whether they wanted to change this thing called the foundation aid formula, which was a very controversial proposal. It basically would revamp the way the state offers public support to its public schools. And it would actually, as some phrased it, punish schools that had lost students. This was Hochul's proposal, and her logic was basically that there were some schools in very wealthy areas that had pretty small student populations that were getting a lot of public funding from the state. And there were schools in poorer areas that had more students and were having more and more students come in that were not getting as much more funding as they should have been. So she wanted to change the formula that in a way that would have resulted in $454 million less in state education spending overall. And it would have changed some other stipulations in the law. But she actually did not get those changes in her budget. I think she is still pushing for other avenues to change the foundation aid formula, but she is not going to be able to do it through this year's budget. And then another really interesting thing that the budget did, which was actually presented in Hochul's State of the State, and something that she's been talking about all year, was this plan for what they call the science of reading. And it's basically a way to teach kids how to read the way you and I probably learned, but kids have not been learning consistently in public schools in recent years. And it basically instructs children to sound words out using phonetics. So you learn what certain letters and combinations of letters sound like, and then you can look at a word, and without the context, you can at least figure out the sound by saying it out loud. And a lot of children, I guess, have actually not been learning to read this way in recent years. They've been learning instead mainly via context clues. And there's been a lot of reporting on a slowing of reading ability among American children. And so New York State is now putting $10 million into a trust run by the state teachers union, which will train educators on this kind of evidence-based reading instruction. And they're also planning to provide school districts with best practices so kids can start learning to read through these kind of really, in some ways, older school methods again.
Staying with budgetary items that impact young people, I know that the governor and Attorney General Letitia James wanted to enact essentially social media limits for kids. They had the Stop Addictive Feeds Exploitation for Kids Act. How did that fare in the budgeting process?
It was not in. It's not entirely clear to me. I'd be interested to learn why it's not in. I think it's possible that there was opposition from tech companies or their lobbyists. But basically, this would have banned algorithms for children. So you can, if you have a Facebook or a Twitter feed and you're an adult who can manipulate the settings, you can set it so that it presents information to you chronologically as it was posted rather than through kind of an optimized algorithm that is believed to result in more kind of addictive scrolling behavior. And basically this proposal would have said, if a kid is using social media, their feed has to be chronological. It can't use this algorithm that can kind of take them down a rabbit hole. But that did not end up in the budget. And Hochul has expressed optimism about maybe getting this through later in the legislative session. But we will see.
And two items that I remember from the state of the state that the governor did hit relatively hard was fighting opioid addiction and then also crime. Crime seemed to have more of an emphasis in this year's state of the state than the previous year. So I'm wondering what headlines you can give us from the budget on both of those items as they overlap sometimes. Drug policy overlaps with both crime and health policy. So in terms of drug policy and crime, what are you noting in this budget?
Definitely. So the Office of Addiction Services and Supports, that's the state office that kind of tackles the opioid addiction and other drug addiction crisis, has almost $1 billion to spend on aid to localities. So that's, you know, giving funding to cities and towns for their locally run addiction service programs. It also appropriates another $86 million of local aid from the state's opioid settlement fund, which was the pot of money that the state got from companies like Purdue Pharma and even distributors like Walgreens and CVS when they were prosecuted for their alleged role in the opioid epidemic. And that funding will be spent on things like housing, treatment, harm reduction programs. But there is this major controversy surrounding these things called overdose prevention centers, which are essentially like safe sites where people can use drugs in a supervised setting. They have access to potential medical care and also things like often clean needles or anything that people need to keep themselves safe and healthy when they're using and where there can be some sort of intervention if they do overdose. So that is something that the state has decided not to fund, even though drug policy advocates really argue that for people who are experiencing very dire addiction, these places can save their lives. There was also a proposal from Hochul. This is sort of where things really begin to overlap with criminal justice, to schedule fentanyl analogs, which are drugs that are not fentanyl, but chemically very similar to fentanyl. And that proposal would have essentially made more drugs carry criminal weight. And advocates who say that people need help rather than prosecution were really pushing against this proposal for this kind of war on drugs crackdown, and it did not get through. So in criminal justice, Hochul was making a really big point this year out of retail theft and her decision to crack down on that. She had a policy list that was very similar to last year's policy attack towards gun crime. So these are things like raising the penalties for assaulting a retail worker and establishing new criminal penalties for knowingly fostering the sale of anything that was stolen. There is one that is really raising eyebrows, which is that it will allow authorities like prosecutors and DAs to charge people with felony grand larceny if they are believed to have committed multiple thefts as part of a, quote, common scheme or plan, even if they weren't against the same retailer. So previously, you know, if somebody robs two separate stores that are owned by two separate people in two separate locations, that's two separate crimes. In this case, people who are believed to have robbed multiple stores in multiple cases can actually be prosecuted for this larger string of, or for this string of robberies as a larger crime. She's also managed to increase the number of offenses that are considered hate crimes. And this raises them to violent felony status and means that if people are convicted of them, they will probably have years of time in prison added onto their sentences. And so this includes things like false reporting of an incident, infractions with weapons possession when somebody was not allowed to have one, and certain sex crimes that will now be considered hate crimes and will just be prosecuted and result in more prison time. So these are two wins that Hochul had on kind of responding to what she's presenting as this sort of crime epidemic in New York.
Right. And finally, in the last subject area that I think we got time to talk about, we've been following pretty closely, pretty regularly over the last couple of years, New York's attempts to reach its climate goals. It set high goals to fight climate change. And just a snapshot of those, remind listeners things like, you know, being 70% electricity from renewable energy by 2030, which is just 6 years away, 40% reduction of greenhouse gas emissions by that time. In this year's budget, there was this idea to have the Climate Change Superfund Act, which is similar to the federal Superfund law that had, polluters, companies that polluted, clean up the environmental mess they made. This would basically impose a fee to companies, fossil fuel companies, for past carbon emissions. Legislators estimated that it would have raised $3 billion annually from fossil fuel companies. It did not make it into the budget. I'm wondering why and what kind of reaction has there been from the environmental community?
Well, the environmental community is pretty mad about this. I will say that as we were editing budget coverage, I just looking at the verb tense, all of the climate proposals. I shouldn't say all, but the vast majority of the climate proposals were getting did not make it in. The budget will not fund this, and there are a few proposals for or potential explanations for why. One is that the fossil fuel companies that operate in New York and throughout the United States have a pretty powerful lobbying apparatus. And she has, Hochul has received donations from some pretty major fossil fuel industry players. So one could wonder if her decision to block this Superfund proposal from the budget is perhaps influenced by that. Both the Senate had included the measure in its budget proposal when it released it. So the Senate was saying, you know, we want the Climate Change Superfund Act in the budget. And the Assembly did not really have a clear stance, but they said they were open to it. And so my understanding is that it was the executive branch that was really deeply opposed to this plan and killed it. A lot of these climate items were just not funded this year.
Wow. And again, those 2030 goals, it's just 6 years away now. So one does wonder how the state's going to do this. But we're going to keep checking in with New York Focus reporters who are on top of this and so many other topics as well. Is there any final thoughts that you want to leave folks with before we go?
I just think that every year the budget comes around and it seems like a lot of people either don't know what's happening or are completely disinterested in it. And this is somewhat by design because it appears like the state government would rather people not pay attention to it. But it really is most of the legislation and the spending that gets decided in New York for the entire year is decided through this big, massive legislative process. So it's worth reading up and seeing where the issues that you care about landed.
Yes, and you can read up on it by finding the article that we've been talking about, your one-stop guide to the 2024 New York State budget from New York Focus. It's up now at wjffradio.org and at nysfocus.com. And we've been talking to managing editor for New York Focus, Maya Hibbett. Maya, thanks once again for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jason.